Hello, I'm Rover, and you're about to listen to a chapter of the audio version of my book, The Moongazers, a pirate queer adventure story. This is a 30-chapter series. Are you enjoying this project, and would you like to support me? You can do that by becoming a patron or buy me a coffee through Buy Me a Coffee. Enjoy! Prologue. A bolt of lightning cut through the dark night as we hide at the foot of the fortress of Idosmel. The stone wall, thick with moss and ferns, feels ancient, damp, and alive. A pair of bats fly over our heads while Frey is calmly sharpening her long dagger. The whetstone on the metal makes a rhythmic, ominous sound. "Are you ready?" echoes Frey's whispered voice in the darkness. "Are you sure it wouldn't be better if we went to him together?" I ask again, trying to keep the worry out of my voice. "I work better alone, Ray," she says steadily. "You do your thing and I'll do mine. Let's not change our plan at the last minute." She puts the dagger away. The sound and movement make one thing clear. Frey is not going to change her mind. "Trust me, I can hold my own," she says determinedly. I try to let go of the doubt that gently gnaws at me. "Very well." We look at each other intently for a moment, as I take her hand in mine. Our eyes collide, as we both realize that this is the moment we've been training for. Possibly, our suffering has not been in vain. This is the night that could spark a revolution. With Idosmel dead, the people of Melshaven can finally begin to shape their own future. The time of this oppressor is over. I caress Frey's hand, where I feel the cruel red scar cutting across her pale skin. "They must die so that we can live," I say softly to the air between us. Frey looks at me and jerks me towards her. "You and me," she murmurs into my red hair. "You and me," I whisper back. Chapter 1. Frey. When I wake up, everything hurts. The smell of mold, salt, and wood overwhelm my senses. I must be in a dark, stuffy room in some basement. I close my eyes and feel the floor beneath me moving. In shock, I realize I must be on a ship. A slight panic starts building in my chest. I'm on a ship, not in a basement, and not in the prison of Melshaven. I fall back on the ground and sigh, a headache growing even more pressing. Methodically, I touch my body, checking for injuries, but all I find are exhausted limbs and at my feet, my emptied out backpack. My weapons are gone. Are these friends or enemies, I wonder? I try to find reassurance in the fact that I've not been tied down. Life has become so erratic. The gap between surviving and dying smaller. But I'm still here, and I'm not planning on leaving anytime soon. I hear footsteps and hold my breath. Friends or enemies? In the doorway appears the silhouette of a large person. The harsh light makes my eyes squint. The anonymous figure throws a bottle of water at me. An old plastic one, dented all over, but it still does its job. I screw off the lid and take a sip of the clear liquid inside and suddenly realize how dry my mouth and lips are. I take another swig while I examine the figure in front of me. I can't make out the person's face, but I feel a pair of eyes inspecting me. What language? They ask me, repeating the question flatly in several languages as if the question isn't weird at all. The words I hear sound strange in my ears. I try to make out their face, but looking into the light, all I can see is a chubby shape standing in the doorway with their hands on their hips. The common language, I say. My voice sounds hoarse. I gulp down the water and try to find stability on my feet. I inhale deeply. Very well, they say, and indicate that I should follow them. I begin by moving my aching body slowly, trying to suppress a grimace while my stiff muscles adjust. My head feels like it's exploding, walking into the light. But this is not a moment to show my weakness. I stifle these urges to move slow, to grab my head, and instead I march one foot in front of the other, head high, welcoming the pain and discomfort as the teachers they can be. We walk down a narrow passage through the ship. In a few steps, we reach another small room. The person gestures for me to sit on a chair and throws a piercing glance when I hesitate. For a moment, I am surprised that the cool, self-confident person is a woman. She has a round face with dimples in her cheeks, brown eyes, and her hair falls just below her ears. "Are you hurt?" She feels my cheek and I try not to flinch. She examines my body quickly. "What are your pronouns? What is your name?" she asks calmly. She looks to be at ease. I swallow my surprise at her questions. "What is this woman doing on a ship?" "She, her," I answer astonishedly. "Pronouns? Who are these people?" "I am Yara. She, her," she says briskly as she prods and squeezes me in various places. I try not to show that everything hurts. "You're on the Wyckoff, Captain Jude's ship. We pulled you from the sea. We took away your knives as a precautionary measure." She said it so matter-of-factly, as if the entire situation isn't strange at all. "You've been out for about 2 days," she continues. I nod, calculating. "Tonight, you'll have a chat with the captain about your stay here. We'll see what happens to you then." Through the small passageway, we enter an open deck, and suddenly I find myself in open air. Immediately, I realize this ship is huge. While my eyes are adjusting to the light, I glimpse Yara pace across the deck with lively steps. She wears a long skirt and a big coat. In front of me, I see the large ship's mast with even larger, somewhat smudgy sails, and several people walking around on the deck. Yara beckons at me while I look about, somewhat surprised. The ship is made of wood, and I recognize it only from the olden day movies. But those are vague memories from a time when we still had TVs and electricity pouring from the walls. We go down some stairs, and I enter an open space below deck. A small group of people are sitting at a table, and they look at me suspiciously. Each has long hair and wears slightly grimy-looking clothes. Something about their appearance is off. Weird. They sit close to each other, like friends, and the men and women are dressed similarly. At some of them, I have to look closely to find out if they are a man or a woman. I turn away from them and I look at Yara. Yara points at a table and passes me a plate of porridge, which I start devouring hungrily. "Prove you're a friend and we won't feed you to the sharks." She turns around and leaves the room. It is then that I notice. She carries an old rifle on her hip. A real antique. I finish my plate and I try to stay calm. I begin to get my wits about me. The battered plastic plate has a picture of a cow on it. The mess is located below deck, at the front side of the boat. Although I feel on high alert, constantly assessing my surroundings, I can't deny how cozy it feels here. There are several tables and benches to sit at. The group, sitting nearby, evidently has lost their interest and continues playing a game. Suddenly I realize, this isn't just water, I'm at sea. I rush out to the deck, and across the railing I see the huge body of water surrounding me. I try not to shiver. With a pounding headache and a tired body, having almost died while escaping, I now find myself on a boat that could mean the end of me. I freaking hate the sea. What a soggy place to die. I close my eyes and I remember a long sprint down the hallway. Ray, waiting for me outside. Where would they be now? Probably not still waiting at the gate. But I shake off those thoughts. They are not for now. On deck, people are busy scrubbing, cleaning, and sailing. It doesn't look like this captain cares about the appearance of their crew, because everybody looks somewhat unkempt and disheveled. Sturdy trousers and boots, some with old-fashioned sneakers in various states of falling apart. Hair cropped short or braided. The people walk around the ship as if it was theirs, which might actually be the case. They are heavily armed with modern and older weapons. At the helm stands a big woman with broad shoulders and black hair combed back with grease, long at the back and short at the front, as if someone had rigorously taken a pair of scissors to it. She stands at the helm, casually talking to someone. Could that be the captain? I receive a couple of smiles, but also some suspicious glares, while I carefully try to get my sore limbs going. There is no land to be seen. All around us is an enormous sea, a grayish mass so large as if the entire world consists of cold, sloshing water. I realize I have no idea where I am, where Ray is, and whether our course is taking me further away or closer to completing our mission. Really, who takes to the sea at all these days? I've experienced it myself. Navigation failing, electronics that stopped working. Since the Great Change, only a few people are out at sea. The last I heard is that there's not enough fuel for the big ships anymore. Sonar and navigation systems aren't functioning. That's besides the monster jellyfish swimming around, the unpredictable weather conditions, and the sea containers floating just below the surface, sinking unsuspecting ships. People generally think it's too expensive and unpredictable of an enterprise. Traveling by land is considered safer, even though that way you might get robbed or just disappear. But this ship with these people is still at sea. Chugging along, the big wooden ship with three masts. She looks well maintained, even though her sails look shabby and clearly have seen many repairs. Then Yara leads me to the deck and plants me at the bow of the ship. I get to stand at the lookout with another woman. She is slight of build, has her hair cut short, but doesn't look to be much older than 16 or 17. She wears a large cloak, as if she expects to be standing there for a long while. She greets me with few words. We are on the lookout for sea containers. If you notice something floating below the surface, blow this, she says routinely, handing me a smudgy red whistle. What is this ship? I ask her with a friendly voice. You're on the Wyckoff. I can't tell you where we're going or what we're doing. Sorry. She looks at me curiously, but also guilt-stricken, as if she owes me something. A ship with all these odd people out at sea? Whatever you may think about it, this is not a normal mission. So many things are different from what I'm used to. If seafaring had been resumed, I would have known about it. Why are they here? What would these people be risking their lives for? Apart from us, the deck is now empty, and I can hear voices in the hold, without being able to make out what is said. How many people are there on this ship? I try one more time. But she just looks at me smilingly. Had I had a knife, I would have gotten her to talk in a matter of seconds. But to jump to torturing people in the middle of the ocean doesn't seem to be the most convincing survival strategy. So I shut up and keep looking ahead. Nothing happens. Steadily, we move forward. After a while, I feel my stomach getting more and more squeezy until I vomit inelegantly across the railing. The girl looks at me and pats me on the back reassuringly. "You'll get used to it," she says. A couple of hours later, the voices start falling silent and the cold sets in. I'm still nauseous, but I try to stay strong. My stomach feels hollow and empty. Yara picks me up and says it's time to meet the captain. I realize that I may not have been tied down, but I have efficiently been kept away from the rest of the crew for the past few hours. Are they up to something? I squeeze my hands and fidget with my empty blade holders while I follow Yara across the ship. How did they do these things on ships in the past? Keel hauling, walking the plank. We walk along the ship's railing, and I hope for a positive outcome. At least I will go down fighting, if it comes down to it. Yara pushes me down the hallway, past the room they had kept me in, and points at a small wooden door that I push open. She turns around and I hear her footsteps disappear. The captain's cabin is small and surprisingly bright, mostly occupied by a desk sustaining a set of maps. Behind the desk is a window that lets generous amounts of light enter the room. The space has two passageways, one probably leading towards a dormitory, the other to another part of the ship. It smells of wood, sea, and something I cannot quite place. I don't see anyone, so now that I have the chance, I walk towards the desk as quietly as I can, which isn't easy due to the ship's movements. I try to take a glance at the maps. Suddenly, the passageway opens and the captain walks into the room. "Hey, you're already here," I hear her saying. The captain's voice is lively with traces of cheer, as if I were a long-expected guest. She walks towards me hastily and takes the maps off the table. She looks at me with an inquisitive gaze while she sits down in her chair. It is, in fact, the woman I saw standing behind the helm earlier today. Black hair falling across shoulders. She wears trousers, a ragged shirt that many years ago would have been white, and her body shows various tattoos. She isn't young, but neither so old that her years show. 30? Who knows? Her pale skin is tanned by many days of sun. She seems relaxed. Clearly, she has no idea who I am or what I do. She scrutinizes me the way I do her, and I watch her greenish-brown eyes with accents of almost red. Autumn eyes. Neither of us speak while she examines me. I'm a little shorter than she is. The long blonde braid I always wear must look ruffled after several days of unconsciousness. My clothes, black pants and a tight sweater, feel rough after having been drenched in seawater. I see her eyes resting upon my right hand, which has a large, fresh scar. I put my hand in my pocket. She sighs, leans back, opens a small locker and throws my 12 knives on the desk. A day after pulling you out from the waves, we heard that Iris Mel has been killed in his sleep, choked in his own blood. Rumor has it that it was a thin blade that cut his throat and that he couldn't even shout for help. She locks eyes with me, and I wriggle on my feet. Countless emotions surge through me, but I stare at her without moving a muscle. Emotions are interferers. If I wanted to get out of this alive, I have to keep my head cool and clear. It's not the first time we picked up someone from the sea, but once we found the 12 knives, let's say we don't believe you're a woodworker. Look, let me get off at the first port we get to, and I promise you that I'm just a woodworker. I study her as I speak, hoping the underlying threat hits home. She snorts and looks out of the window for a second. You really think I'm just gonna let you off board in whatever town? We're implicated now. We can't prove we have nothing to do with it. She gets up and leans against the desk and twiddles with her pens. Stupid, I think. Bent over like that, with her head leaning forward, I could take her down and have a weapon against her throat in about 2 seconds. Untrained or too trusting. This woman looks strong, but her way of moving so close to me tells me that she is not a murderer and not a fighter. Eros was an asshole, she continued. And I get the sentiment. I don't know who you are or why you did it, but his rule has caused many people to suffer. So we decided to keep you here until we find a suitable place to drop you off. We can't tell you how long that will take. Maybe a couple of months. Maybe we'll sink in the meantime. Consider it a small price to pay, since, well, if we had left you floating around, you'd be dead. She speaks without breaking eye contact. I begin to feel hot under her penetrating look. I wriggle on my feet. I could just sneak away anytime we get close to land. We can't be that far from Mel's Haven. I hold out my hand. Deal, I say unwavering. And like a couple of big businessmen in the old days, we shake hands. Hers are rough and strong, with calluses on the spots where rope has scoured her skin. My hands feel cold compared to the fire that glows in hers. You're our guest. We'd like to know your name so we can address you. Also, you need to know what we expect of you to do as part of this ship. Everyone participates and gets tasks. The same goes for you. Prove yourself to us and we'll accept you as part of the crew until our ways part. Afterwards, you won't tell anyone what you've seen here. Our moment of shaking hands turns uneasy when, pronouncing these last words, she begins squeezing my hand. But I can squeeze just as well. So for a while we just stand there, crushing each other's hands and staring each other down. You can call me Frey. She, her, I mutter between clenched teeth. Hello, Frey. She lets go of my hands and smiles, exposing a large row of teeth. She shakes her hair and points at the door casually. I walk away and stumble on my feet as the ship makes a sudden movement. If anything, my years of training has given me grace and balance, but this ship makes me feel clumsy, helpless, and powerless. I try to keep my back straight as I leave the cabin.